And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
Morning, as it happens, because we're releasing this on early morning Black Friday, and welcome to episode 9 of Boom Goes the Dynamite, the AEW Dynamite review show here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I'm Jeffrey. With me is Chris. Chris, how are you this fine Thanksgiving day as we're recording?
Yeah, doing good. We're up bright and early, or as bright and early as we can manage on a holiday, and we're ready to talk AEW related stuff.
So we'll start, of course, with the AEW Dark that I did not get to see except for one match, and that would be the opening match. So I do know that Tony Schiavone was solo, and they were not in the control center. It looked like they were actually taping it from Indianapolis.
Yeah, that did appear to be the case. So Tony was alone on assignment for this one. And this week around, alongside Excalibur, is none other than the self-proclaimed chairman and the actual good hand of AEW, Sean Spears. And I use that term in the most demeaning way possible, by the way.
So I know we had some matches. I know what the main event was, quote-unquote. It was Kenny Omega defending the AAA Mega Campeonato against Jack Evans. But the only match I got to saw was the opening one, which was Trent Beretta against Pentagon. And, did not like this result one bit.
Yeah, I thought it was a weird result to have. Nothing against Trent, mind you. I do think he's a capable singles guy, and he showed flashes of potential within that. Even before this particular run with the AEW side of defense. But given the way the finish went, especially with Pentagon doing the hammerlock arm breaker portion, and while I think the sequence was of the counter being sudden to lead into basically the strong zero portion happened.
Dude Buster.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I was thinking the double team finisher for a second. But yeah, it's just, I didn't think that Trent really needed that compared to Pentagon, who has been as well known as a singles guy as he's been well known as a tag team guy, kind of thing. So
yeah, well, I'm going to have some more feelings about how the Lucha Bros are being portrayed coming up here. So what else was on the show?
After that, they did run one of those undesirable to undeniable packages, but without Cody this time. They just ran a video package on Shanna's whole 13-year journey leading up to this.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah, it was filmed in a hotel room. Yeah, I thought that was kind of strange that they didn't. Yeah, they did not do the. Cody Rhodes was not there, and of course, technically he wasn't in Indianapolis, so.
Yeah, so it makes sense, I guess, to, not play it that way. But then they also had a backstage promo with Alex Marvez talking with Big Swole, and she cut a phenomenal promo.
Now, I did not see, so.
Yeah, definitely go out of your way to check that out on either Dark, or I think there's even clips and pieces of it on good old Twitter land, but I would recommend just watching the full thing. Like, she gave a phenomenal promo to basically set herself up as, she's a big deal. She's coming to win and stuff like that. So the next match was Big Swole versus Shanna. I liked the match itself. I liked the way that the two of them worked together. Big Swole's pretty awesome in terms of just like how utterly strong she is and the stuff that she does with that. I do want to see some of these kinds of single matches that we've been getting on Dark for the women's division actually make it onto TV a little bit more rather than being relegated to the post live TV recording show portion, but
right.
This is still pretty good. Shanna did pick up the win after countering a rolling elbow strike into a pretty good looking dragon suplex and got the win with that. So good match. About, I think it was around like the your 10-minute-ish range on that. So
yeah, that happened. Yeah, Big Swole needs to get on TV, period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we're all in agreement with that. Phenomenal stuff on her part of things, and I definitely want to see more of it. They did do a recap of Dynamite shortly after that, just kind of detailing the Scorpio Sky Jericho match that we're going to be talking about for Dynamite in this particular episode. And after that, we had a quick squash match where Awesome Kong just beat the holy living crap out of Leva Bates.
I bet you were smiling from ear to ear then.
It was nice. Kong using the Ura Ken again, which still makes me think they are some way, shape, or form. They probably want to do this Kong versus Kong match. It's just a matter of, I guess, when Aja Kong is available to do it. Because,
I'm ready for it when it happens. So
yeah, definitely. I think we've wanted this for quite some time now.
At least since Fight for the Fallen. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but I mean, that does happen. Kong ends up cutting a piece out of Bates's hair, adds it onto her belt. So that's a thing that happens. And then we have the main event where it is Kenny Omega defending the Triple A Mega Campeonato against Jack Evans. The match itself was fine. Jack Evans shone with the spots that he was given in it, which, again, makes me think Jack Evans literally needs to be in more singles matches. Nothing against Angelico, but Jack Evans is, such a unique talent in his own right that I do think showcasing him in your main shows and showcasing him a little bit more in singles wouldn't hurt. Kenny did okay. Typical kind of Kenny Omega match. And I think that might be my biggest problem with it is that, unsanctioned or not, he's coming off arguably what's supposed to be one of the biggest losses of his career, and he acted like nothing happened. You know, it's just another match.
That seems to be Kenny Omega's whole arc in general.
You
almost get the feeling like it just doesn't matter to him if he wins or loses because, hey, if it was great, then fine. A friend of the other show, the Cubs fan, I met up with him yesterday, and he was saying that, he actually thought that the Pentagon versus Beretta match was better than Kenny Omega versus Jack Evans, which is saying something considering, this was for the AAA title, and it was pretty big because that was an opportunity that Jack Evans never actually got when he was...
When he was wrestling in Mexico for as many years. Exactly. It's nuts.
I have heard that, it was basically more Kenny doing, trying to do his New Japan epics, which, again, that's a point we're going to bring up later coming up here. Before we get into the actual show, a couple of AEW adjacent items. First, Kylie Rae gave a statement.
Mm-hmm.
This week, and basically trying to say, nothing happened to prompt her leaving, which, okay, maybe that's the case. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. At this point, it's one of those things where, unless she says something otherwise after the statement, it's dead and buried at this point. She said nothing made her particularly, no one specifically made her leave. It was just stuff that was going on with her. Okay. Stuff going on with her. Said as much. Let's move on.
I mean, I saw her at Black Label Pro a couple weeks ago, and she seemed okay. So, things are what they are. I mean, I guess that we're also looking for controversy at all times, and we never consider the fact that maybe she just figured that this wasn't for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. That's all I'm going to say. I don't know what happened. I know what the person who apparently it happened to has said. So, whatever,
Mm-hmm. At this point, just live and move on accordingly. And if you're going to criticize AEW and stuff, look to criticize stuff that they're doing that you can actually see rather than trying to find, some hidden conspiracy that 20 fucking people believe in and pass it on through Twitter like a game of fucking telephone.
Right. So. Well, the Kenny Omega conspiracy theory now about, New Japan trying to prevent him from entering the country or some shit, you know? Like, come on. Really?
Let's not even touch up on that again, yeah. Otherwise we're going to be here for a while, so yeah, let's move on.
Well, the other thing is, apparently Joey Janela went on a Twitter rant, which I missed. I had to be told this. I guess he went on some sort of Twitter rant where saying he wasn't happy about how things are going in AEW and he wasn't going to be at Dynamite. And I guess he showed up at GCW's show yesterday.
Yes, he did. Chopper said, I believe that tweet was deleted, and from the looks of it, it did seem to be like a mostly in-character thing that happened.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the first time Joey Janela has done this in-character.
Yeah, which is fine. I mean, it's helping build stuff between him and Sean Spears, and goodness knows Sean Spears needs every bit of help he can get to get himself over at this point in time, anybody.
Although, I am going to say this. I didn't actually, you know, just for the one match that I saw on Dark, I am going to say this. I didn't actually think Sean Spears was that bad on commentary.
He wasn't terrible on commentary. I actually didn't hate it. I will say that. I'm just saying, in ring-wise, it's...
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, well, anyway, so, yeah, so there's that, but all this, oh, go ahead.
Before that, too, one thing to be noted as well, talking about Twitter and spats, Shanna and Nyla Rose got into it as well, which led to Nyla Rose actually attacking Shanna backstage during, when she was doing, I guess, like, meet and greets and, like, signing stuff prior to the show last night. Nyla Rose apparently just came in and beat the crap out of her. And I guess we have a program there to look forward to over the next couple. So, yeah, I mean, that's cool.
It's wrestling. It's probably worked, but, you know.
No, I agree, but I think it's one of those things where we talk about, like, in a lot of these women divisions around the globe where it almost seems like they just focus on who has the title and who's fighting them for the title, and then there's no other angles going on kind of thing. So it's kind of nice to see, like, the girls getting singles programs all over the place, even if it doesn't involve a belt. So,
right. With that in mind, that leads us to beautiful, sunny Hoffman Estates, Illinois, for AEW Dynamite, Episode 9, live from the Sears Center. Yours truly was in attendance for that.
Had good seats on top of it, too, from what I saw.
That was a shock because, you know, you don't get the sense of it. Now, the last time I had been in the Sears Center was not for either All In or All Out. It was for the shitty indoor football league match. You know, like, you know, the Arena Football League, only much more minor league than that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I get this feeling.
This was like 8 years ago. So, like, I hadn't been in there in a while, and I forgot the scale of the place. So when I bought my tickets, I thought, oh, okay, I'll be up, like, you know, first level balcony, you know, the first balcony level. Okay, this won't be so bad. I did not realize how close to the floor I actually was until I got in my seat.
There you go. That's, I mean, the venue itself isn't bad.
Well, and then, so I get there, it's like, I couldn't find my seat. I was like, oh, wait, somebody is in it. And the guy was like, oh, yeah, these are just friends of mine. I'm actually over there. I was like, oh, okay. So he very graciously left. So I got in my seat. I was like, sorry, I didn't mean to break the party up, you know. So in front of us, there is this couple, and one of the couple's fathers were there.
Yeah.
And they said that they had an extra seat. So they offered the down, you know, one row below, so I'm getting even closer, and he goes, you know, if you want to take that seat, and then they can have their buddy come back.
Oh,
shit. So it worked out. So I had even closer seats than that.
There you go.
So I got to see quite a bit of what was going on. So when I got there, I got there, and there was a mob at the door. So it took a while for me to get in. I was worried I was going to miss, at least one of the dark matches. Well, no, because when I got in, they had, you know, the giant present, and they had the ring set up for the opening segment. So they didn't have any dark. Mm-hmm. So all the dark matches happened post show.
Okay, interesting. Because we've always seen it seemingly the system was, one before the show and then two after over the last couple of weeks. So
yeah, that was my understanding too. So anyway, so we open up the show, of course. Jim Ross and Excalibur on commentary. They got introduced. Tony Schiavone was nowhere to be found.
He was on assignment, according to JR. So there is that.
Yeah, on assignment, which means either he decided he wasn't gonna work today, or he's doing something with the Georgia Bulldogs.
Mm-hmm. Either way.
Chris, from what I understand, JR had a complete mare on commentary, but you're going to have to go into details.
Yeah, in general, not JR's best night, especially with certain comments that were made, which we can cover as we go through certain matches here. But he was okay during this opening segment, so good.
So for once, it took 9 episodes of TV, but... Yeah, AEW finally opened up with a 20-minute segment, much like Monday Night Raw, which was in Rosemont, Illinois, just 2 days prior. And, of course, the last of a 4-night stand for the WWE at the old Rosemont Horizon, now known as the Allstate Arena.
Yeah.
I am going to point out that the arena was not filled tonight.
And I think that makes sense, just given the fact that it's the day before Thanksgiving and people travel and stuff. So
people travel, and let's face it, there was probably there may have been some wrestling burnout too.
Yeah, I do agree with that, the circumstances.
Yeah, given the fact that there was a 4-night stand of the WWE at the Rosemont Horizon, just prior. But I will also say that the vast majority, even when TV went off the air, the vast majority of people did stick around for AEW Dark, including myself.
That's good.
And Cubs, so,
Yeah, good stuff. So, happy to hear that much. But so, I'll say this, given that at the very least this is the first episode where we've had an opening segment rather than a match, and given that this was built up last week around, I did not mind it at all. The segment itself, we did get introduced with your usual fanfare, marching band with trumpets, mascots, portrait of the Inner Circle within the ring, and then none other than Soul Train Jones opening things off by announcing
Mr. Fuck Money himself.
Listen, those breadsticks are not going to pay for themselves. So,
I am going to say, this was the segment was good. Please don't ever open a show with a 20-minute promo again, because I think it really set the tone and the stage for the rest of the episode. I mean, it really had a Monday Night Raw feel to it, which at this day and age is not necessarily a compliment.
Yeah, for sure.
I will say this. I think Ted Irvine, Chris Jericho's father, became the biggest heel in that building.
Yeah,
with his little speech about the Blackhawks.
Yeah, I mean, had to remind him of the... good old days accordingly, and outside of the mini dynasty they had in the 2000s, it's not exactly all that good for them at this point, which for them, given that they're the division rival to my Abs right now, good. But the Chicago, this the Blackhawks all you want kind of thing.
I'm a Pittsburgh Penguins fan myself. So
yeah, so for you, it's not that. You're indifferent.
I don't mind the Blackhawks, but if I nailed my colors to any colors to the mass, as far as the NHL goes, yeah, the Pittsburgh Penguins are my team of choice. So.
Here's all to say. The segment did drag on about 5 minutes or so too long, and I think the Ted Irvine thing definitely helped towards that, unfortunately. Like, I get why they did it, but just wasn't the biggest fan of that aspect of it. However, all of the stuff with the Inner Circle, including the Santana and Ortiz stopping at their local bodega and just giving Jericho all the goods off of it, was priceless.
The chanclas. I was like, oh man,
those double was a weapon. A little bit of the 40 that was also really good.
In some ways it seems a little stereotypical too, but at the same time, I knew about the chanclas from, you know, both my partner and my son who learned about the chanclas in Spanish class. So.
Yeah, definitely. So another big thing is Chris Jericho teaming up with the guys off of Arrow with Knocking Point to actually make a little bit of the bubbly. Like, that's an official thing now. You can buy it.
Yeah, well, we knew it was going to come, right?
It makes sense because they did a thing with Cody as well and Stephen Amell making their own, like, wine a couple of years back. So they've had that partnership in the pockets for a while now. It was just a matter of what was next. So, this was kind of a logical move for them to do.
Yeah. So, of course, during the segment, of course, I watched, you know, SCU come out in the marching band outfits. You know, it's like, oh, this isn't subtle at all, is it?
Yeah.
Showed up from backstage. It's like, okay. But,
yeah, of course. But another thing, too, that didn't like was Justin Roberts getting beat up, unfortunately.
Yeah, Justin Roberts from Arlington Heights, Illinois. Not too far from where I am. Graduate of Buffalo Grove High School. And he got beat down. So Dasha Gonzalez, of course, is your ring announcer for today, and she was pretty good, actually.
Dasha did great. I just think that between the Ted Irvine portion and then Justin getting beat up is what kind of helped the segment drag a little too long. With SCU obviously coming in to make the save in that regard, or as much of a save as they could manage at that point.
Yeah.
But it sets the table again. Scorpio Sky versus Jericho in the main event for the AEW Championship. And from that, we do go into our opening bout where JR and Excalibur are on commentary. And a guy from, I think, All Elite Fleet, which I think is something that TNT is doing with them for like one of their sponsorship partners. I think it was State Farm for this one, from what I recall hearing. A guy by the name of Marco Martinez is there to do the third man for the commentary portion for this match.
They introduced him. I confess I had absolutely no idea who that was, and that's going to be another running theme through this show. Not necessarily me, but in general. But the first match, of course, was the Best Friends, you know, Trent Beretta and Chuck Taylor, with Orange Cassidy, dressed as a turkey, against the Lucha Bros, Pentagon Jr., Rey Fénix. Orange Cassidy in the turkey outfit was great. The match itself was good. I hate the story that they're telling here. I absolutely hate it. I absolutely hate that they're trying to make the Lucha Bros into heels.
Yeah, that's the thing that I don't get. I get if you want to, like, make them have, like, an edge to the way that they do things and such, but these guys are just too good, I think, to where no matter what you try to do with them with the antics pre- and post-matches, their own talent is still going to get people to cheer for them regardless.
Well,
like, shooting yourself in the foot kind of thing.
Yeah,
by
and
doing
let's
that.
Face it, Cerro Miedo is over as a chant, you know?
It has always been over. Like, and that is a thing that people have loved doing since just about the first time they've seen him do it.
I mean, as Lawrence and I pointed out, these are wrestlers that people actually like in real life, you know? And it's just amazing that there was this Twitter thread going around, which I, of course, contributed to. I think you did, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Saying that if we're marketing AEW, we put Pentagon as one of the marquee guys because, holy shit, the look and the lifestyle here, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, both, and I'll give Fenix credit, too, because he has a really good look for a masked lucha guy as well, too, from an aesthetic point, obviously. But Pentagon, I think somebody mentioned it outright, he's basically, like, if you're talking the comparison between brands, he's basically what Scorpion is to Mortal Kombat. Like, it's that iconic of a look.
He's psychopath kung fu skeleton, I guess, is what the tweet had said.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I think that's my problem with it, is that sometimes when you look at it from a marketing standpoint, for most of us, we're like, it's right there, why are you not using it? But then you remember the guys who run this company, and you're like, oh yeah, I get why you don't see it.
Yeah. I don't know. And plus now both Fenix and Pentagon have now done the job for Trent Beretta. Which is good that they're willing to do the job, but this is not how you build a feud.
Yeah, and again, we like Trent Beretta, we like Chucky T, we like Orange Cassidy.
He's one of the most people in the group, but
we just think it's a little bit of a weird result for us. But hey, somewhere out there, people wanted to see the best friends win, so you know, good for you guys if you did want that. So
I understand you have to build both sides. You have to build up everybody, but since the tag tournament finals, they have not been doing right by the Lucha Bros.
Mm-hmm.
And
hoping that changes soon, but yeah.
Yeah, and this idea that they're trying to make them heels is just ludicrous. I mean, I know you need heels in a promotion, too. Yeah, those guys ain't them, you know?
Yeah, definitely not. And especially with what's coming up throughout the course of this show, which we'll talk about, it should make it clear that you can keep them as lucha baby faces who have a bit of an edge, yes, and who are a bit of assholes towards other guys.
And yeah, we all know that Pentagon was a rudo for, you know, he was a rudo for most of his, you know, AAA career and Lucha Underground career, but I mean, not on the U.S. Indies.
No, yeah, definitely not.
So,
biggest thing to take from that is the best friends are getting on a little bit of a roll here, so we'll see how that translates into future programming. From there, we do go into...
Wait, time out. But you also told me that this is where we got one of JR's not very good moments.
Yes, where he called Trent Taven, as in Matt Taven.
Whoops. Not that there's really a resemblance there, but...
No, definitely not. For one, Trent is a very good-looking person, and Matt Taven is an ugly gnome. So,
and Matt Taven did not, you know, headline a CMLL anniversario either. Oh, I'm sorry, no, Trent Beretta did not. Now you got me confused. Thanks, JR. God.
Yeah. Thanks.
Moving on, we move on to the second match: Hikaru Shida and Chris Statlander against B. Priestley and Emi Sakura. This is another one of JR's not so great moments.
Yeah, saying to Emi Sakura that Freddie Mercury has never looked so oriental is a terrible line. You should be ashamed of yourself.
That right there is about Jim Cornette level.
Yeah, that's bad. Really bad. Not a fan at all. Not deserved by anybody involved. But really super happy that Chris Statlander is here, by the way. And it seems like she seems to be officially with the company now, if she's being featured on Dynamite, it feels like.
Yeah.
So super excited for that.
Yeah, this match was pretty good, I have to say. Mm-hmm. This match was pretty good. So I don't have anything in particular to say about it. I think there was a very funny bit with Emi Sakura raising Bryce Remsburg's hand, and you know he was having none of it, and the crowd just turned on Bryce Remsburg after that.
Poor Bryce. He deserves better.
He got so much shit through this show. So following, of course, the result was Emi Sakura pinning Chris Statlander with a Le Magistral. And
yeah, she did catch her with a mic stand before that on top of it. So there is
some heel shtick there,
but Emi Sakura, trainer of D Topla, as we found out earlier.
Our friend D Topla. My God, that was the biggest shockwave of wrestling Twitter this past weekend.
Yeah, finding out that D Topla was actually Blue Lotus of Gato Move for the past 2 years, that was interesting to say the least.
God. Yeah, that was amazing. But also, just to point out, Hikaru Shida was pretty over with the crowd in Hoffman Estates. So
that's really good news, and she seems to be really happy, sort of adapting to her new lifestyle in the United States now that she's moved in full time after finishing her Makai duties. So
yeah,
super happy for her. Like, I hope really good things happen for her going forward, because she's fantastic in ring, and seeing the crowd take into her like that is a very good sign.
Following that match, we had a videotaped John Moxley promo, which of course was hot fire.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the line where he basically just says that he is napalm deaf. I mean, what else can you say? John Moxley can do no wrong.
I mean, but which era napalm deaf is he?
I wonder.
Was Barney still Singer then, or are we talking about the post earache years? Come on, John, give us something to go on here. Which era Napalm Death are you?
Yes, John Moxley, please tweet us at Strong Style Story for deets on that.
Yes, we'll let you know about your taste in Napalm Death. Yes, of course, you know that. Then again, you know, we do have, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. has his finisher. Orienteering with Napalm Death.
There is that. Of course, there was also an interview that came out a little bit earlier this week when he was promoting Dynamite on a radio show, actually, where he addressed, because you remember his particular match with one Kenneth Omega and Renee Young's, his wife's reactions to it on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Or something else. And he actually talked about that. And the way he described it is he basically went like, she's over dramatic. Come on, it comes with the territory. You know, I signed the contract. We're together forever, and I'll love you forever. But you've got to understand, if you're one of my friends or loved ones, especially if you're my wife, you're going to deal with some moments where things get a little cringy and weird, you know?
Does Renee not know that her husband was part of one of the most disgusting deathmatch spots I've ever seen, ever?
I'm sure she does at this point. And even she was on Twitter saying overdramatic and rolling her eyes on it as a response to that. So they're a fantastic couple. Like, I would watch like a sitcom just based on their daily life alone, to be honest.
I still wonder what her reaction was when he brought home a kidnapped young lion.
If I ever meet Renee Young, I will definitely ask that, because we need to know. Like, we need to know what her reaction to Shota Umino was.
Honey, can I keep him?
It's like, John, you can't just adopt people off the street.
He has a father, John. Come on.
Yes.
By the way, just so you know, after the Mox promo, it was a commercial break, and that was when we got the traditional tossing of the t-shirts in the crowd. So,
and that was what from what I heard, Jurassic Express were the ones that did that for this one.
I don't know. It wasn't them. It was some. It was some
just some
dudes.
Random person.
Yeah, some dudes. All right. So, you know, no, it was not Jurassic Express by any stretch.
Okay, gotcha.
We come back and we have the third match, the return of Executive Vice President Cody Rhodes to the ring in a complete squash match against Matt Nix. Shout out to Hoffman Estates for the freelance wrestling chant that broke out.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, it was a thing, yep. It was a complete squash. He won by figure four, which, you know, considering all the finishers that they've buried, like the Canadian Destroyer and Falcon Arrow, winning by a figure four leg lock. Okay, guys. But yeah. You know, afterwards we had a brief promo where Cody calls out MJF, and then he gets attacked by Butcher and the Blade.
Which, well, I get that a lot of people in Chicago didn't recognize, but
yeah,
we've seen our share of beyond wrestling and stuff of the kind, and just I'm excited. Like, that's another really good team here that they brought into the company that way.
Yeah, there were Who Are You chants going around the Sears Center for that one.
Who earns? And again, it kind of is ironic to me in a way that a crowd or fans of a company that don't want the status quo of WWE are willing to chant Who Are You at whoever is new that shows up within the program that they claim to support,
but I think there's a lot of Pavlovian conditioning.
Yeah, that I think the less we spend on dissecting that, probably the better, or else we'll be here a while. But
so
excited to see Butcher and the Blade, and it gives something for Allie to sink her teeth into a little bit more as well, since her and the man who is the Blade, Braxton Sutter, are in real life married. So
yeah,
you get that partnership on top of it too.
Yeah, and wasn't one of them Pepper Parks at one time?
Yes, that was Braxton Sutter.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, I mean, so coming, you know, them attacking Cody Rhodes after he cut a promo on MJF leads me to think, okay, so Butcher, Blade, MJF, and Wardlow, that's an interesting unit.
And of course, with Andy Williams being there with his hulkingly amazing mustache self, the Large Man Cinematic Universe gets another addition by this view. So,
hey, shout out to Dave and Lee. Shout out to Dave and Lee of Days of Thunder, who are the reason why we're putting this out on Black Friday instead of Thanksgiving Day. So,
indeed.
The fourth match was one of the advertised matches, actually. Kenny Omega against Billy the Fish himself.
That's Pac, for those who are not familiar with the reference yet, after like 9 episodes.
And, this is the rematch from the match that happened in this very building at All Out.
Mm-hmm.
20-minute time limit match, which is good because, as we've determined, you know, cutting down the time means we cut out a lot of Kenny Omega's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we did. We got ourselves a TV match. To the surprise of nobody, Executive Vice President Kenny Omega beats Pac, not with One Winged Angel, though.
Yeah. I thought that doing it with the crucifix, given that the way that Pac beat him was that crucifix submission portion of things, was an interesting caveat into it. And I guess it does set up the eventual rubber match between them now that they're 1-1. So
yeah, it was a fun match. It was not as good as the one at All Out,
which is fair. The one at All Out really was like fantastic stuff between the two. So it's kind of hard to live up to that, I feel. But
yeah. But again, also, you know, they again, because we have the TV time limit, it does cut out a lot of Kenny's bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Which is good.
And Chris, just so you know, yeah, it looks like they are going with the pared down version of Kenny's entrance. So
yeah, I think the biggest thing that I've noticed is that if it's a championship match, because they did do the longer version of that on AEW Dark, but I got that I guess they basically did it as a, hey, it's a champion's entrance type of thing. But I guess for the TV stuff, they're doing the cut down entrance, which is fine.
Well,
I like it better.
Well, they did the cut down entrance at Full Gear, too, if you noticed.
I did. Mm-hmm.
So,
which makes me think it's specifically the longer ones being specifically saved for championship situations. So
yeah. So
anyways, yeah, minor details, but
The fifth match was the final for the Diamond Dozen, for the diamond ring that we still don't really know what it signifies.
We don't, but I mean, hey, Diamond Dallas Page is in the building to present that, so I guess that's another thing to be excited about for everybody.
Yeah, we got to get to that too. But anyway, of course, your final was Adam Page against Maxwell Jacob Friedman, MJF,
whose entire Tron at this point is him, I believe, kicking Cody in the balls, from what I recall.
Just him and Wardlow beating the shit out of Cody Rhodes. That's his entrance video.
I'm just waiting for him to start sporting "I beat up Cody" t-shirts at this point.
I
broke Cody's eye or something, or I broke Cody's balls. Something akin to that, yeah.
Yeah, referencing the old t-shirt, yeah. But anyway, MJF gets the win on Adam Page. I will say this, Adam Page was pretty over with the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good that they're kind of rebuilding him, because they do need other people, you know, to be, you know, main event baby faces too.
Here's what I'll say though, for what it's worth, given that the finish of the match was MJF kind of executing a really botched for brutal kind of looking crossroads.
That was not good.
Yeah, JR at least did have a good line on that where he said, "That's not a crossroads, that's the double crossroads." Which I'm like, double cross, crossroads. Okay, JR, you get one.
Yeah.
Everybody gets one. That's your one for this.
Yeah, I saw that. Like, that is not how that was supposed to go. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But so in the end, MJF wins it. The ring is presented to him by Diamond Dallas Page, and they broke the cardinal rule of DDP appearances. We got no diamond cutter.
Boo earns.
How the hell do you have DDP and not produce a diamond cutter?
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, to me specifically, I get that they don't want to make either MJF or Wardlow look bad in any way, shape, or form this early on. But I do think that one of those security guys easily could have taken a diamond cutter for a good measure before.
Somebody could have taken a diamond cutter here, you know?
And again, it makes me feel really awkward for Wardlow because, you know, we're building him as this large man, and then DDP, a very large man himself, is on the scene and kind of towers over him.
Yeah, that was,
you know, awkward, but
yeah, the scale of that was, yeah. But yeah. Again, how do you break that cardinal rule? Is that you have to have, at least if you're going to bring out Paige, you have to have a diamond cutter on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So, following this, we get an in-ring promo from Dustin Rhodes, which of course, you know, just leads to more Inner Circle versus the Elite
stuff. And it does, and it sets up the main event for next week, which we've learned is going to be the Young Bucks and Dustin Rhodes against Proud and Powerful and Sammy Guevara of the Inner Circle. So,
gosh, I wonder who's going to take the pin in that one.
Yeah, good questions indeed.
I wonder. Now, I know that immediately after that, we got another Join the Dark Order video.
Mm-hmm.
Which, these are brilliant. I love these videos.
Yeah, it's a fantastic bit that they finally started doing for these guys. And given that they came into the company without really much of a direction and just putties alongside them, yeah, this is a phenomenal turn to really just build them up as not only a heel team, but as, oh shit, that's how they're getting people to follow them, kind of thing.
I absolutely love these videos, and yes, I will use the hashtag Join Dark Order because this is great stuff. So unfortunately, it's just only a matter of time before they fuck it up somehow.
Fingers crossed that they don't, because it's a good tag team that they have on hand here, and they finally have something interesting for them to sink their teeth into. So,
like, I mean, these videos should be so good that, like, some of the other active members of the roster should be like part of the cult. Like, you know, it's almost like a sleeper member of the cult,
yeah,
you know?
And I really do think that you have potential to do something with that with some of the guys that aren't doing much loitering on the undercard. Like, if you want to move the Peter Avalons and Leva Bateses of the world off the librarian stuff into something else, this is a great way of doing this kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, you could transition them easily. Hey, you know what? That's a thing we haven't brought up yet.
What is?
Okay, so remember a long time ago, back on our other show, when Juice Robinson and David Finlay had, you know, begun their abortive run in Ring of Honor, and, you know, when they formed Lifeblood.
Yes, which we found out hilariously enough that Juice left it because he was getting paid a third of what New Japan was paying him.
Yeah. But
for it and stuff, which hilarious.
I think we all know about how ROH pays people now.
Yeah.
A thing or two. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. Spoilers. When I, doing my shitty IT job and making over twice what a reigning champion of the company is making, that's not good.
No. Mm-mm.
But anyway, but remember the thing. So was Tennille Dashwood was part of that unit too, and I agree. If you're gonna have, if you have women wrestlers in your company and you're forming units, I think you should have women in your units.
Yes,
this has not happened in AEW yet.
Yeah, to an extent, I think the only technical thing where it's happened at this point is the Butcher and the Blade with Ali as the Bunny and them being a trio together. But yeah, we do, I would think, for
like
a stable, we should see that.
Yeah,
for sure. Like
who are the women? Who's going to be the women's members of the Inner Circle? I mean,
yeah, exactly. Like, if I would just think, from the Inner Circle perspective, if you want to conquer the entire company, that you'd be looking for someone to take that women's championship off of Riho and bringing it to them, kind of thing as well. So it's,
yeah, it was like that was like the one of the many, but one of the initial flaws of the New World Order way back when is that they had exactly one junior heavyweight member, and then they fired. You know, it was six. You know, Sean Waltman.
Yep,
and then they fired him. So it's like, why wouldn't the New World Order want to also, you know, if they're going to conquer all belts,
you kind of need representatives in all divisions. You know, I get exactly where you're coming from now with that. So
yeah,
it's the same discussion we had on Lifeblood all that time way back too. So
which of course ended up being a fat load of nothing, but.
And that's the thing, like, for me in particular, I do like the idea of something like the Dark Order having that, given the cold aspects that they're bringing up as well. Imagine if they had the actual gonads to actually get one of these top-tier company guys and make them a sleeper cell for the Dark Order down the line, and they won a world title, and suddenly we realize he's part of the cult.
I mean, there are women in the recruitment videos.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, not just for like the women's division, but even like the world heavyweight division portion as well too. Like, I think there's potential to do something like that. I just hope that they do tap into it, I guess, is the best way of putting it. But with that said, though, we finally do move on into the main event,
though. But while that was going on after the Dark Order, I guess there was a commercial break because we had the Bucks in the arena teasing, you know, what you said, that six-man match. And Matt yelling at Nick for ruining the surprise too early. But they also put over the Sears Center saying that, you know, this building feels like home because this is where it all started, which is fair enough.
Okay, so it must have been during the commercial break where that happened then, because I definitely didn't get to see it, but no, good stuff. So, I mean, nice little segment to transition into the main event of the show.
Our world title match, Le Champion Chris Jericho against Scorpio Sky.
I'm making a third defense of the belt at this point, I believe.
Yeah, that is. That's his V3 defense. I'm just going to throw this out there. This match sucked.
I was okay with it, but it was definitely nothing that blew you out of the water, per se. And I do think that, given what happened last week with the segment, where there wasn't as many high hopes, I think, for Scorpio Sky winning, as any, even with some really good near falls at the end that they had. So,
when you say last week, you mean in the segment in which Jurassic Express seemed to get over more than SCU
yes,
did?
Yes, exactly.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, this was no good. And of course, you know, they made a big deal that they, you know, that you know, seconds weren't allowed out, but of course, you know, they showed up anyway.
And I mean, at the very least, there wasn't a huge impact regarding those where it affected the match result directly in and of itself, but I do think that it was kind of the old trope that they ran into, that just to fill in like an extra 2 minutes of time leading into, you know, TV and such. But while there were some good spots in the match itself, I definitely would say out of Jericho's defenses of the title so far, this one has been the weakest of the bunch.
Yeah, people were chanting for Scorpio, but this is such a meh match. I just wasn't into it at all, and this was the main event for TV.
Yeah,
but
Jericho does escape it. Uses the Lion Tamer to get the submission victory. He succeeds in his V3 defense of the AEW World Heavyweight Title, but of course, at the end of it all, Jericho decides to go back and do more punishment by putting Scorpio back in the Lion Tamer, and then John Moxley's music hits.
And then we get the biggest pop of the entire goddamn night. For a guy walking through the crowd, and that was it.
Staring it over, and it's kind of setting up the seeds at this point of exactly what John Moxley wants, which is, it's the right call to make at this point, given the level of overness of both guys, Jericho being the top dog and the arguably, again, the biggest heel in the company, not named MJF, and John Moxley being, well, John Moxley.
John Moxley, so. Yeah, it was a bit. Actually, Moxley actually kind of walked over by me, and I did not get a chance to take a pic. It happened too quickly, but Moxley didn't even say a word. Even after TV went off the air, he did not say a word on the mic or anything. I mean, he was yelling something, but, you know, unintelligible. But, you know, and of course, you know, I think off the air, who's the guy who eats apples?
Oh, QT Marshall, I think is what it is.
I think that was him that took a Death Rider off the air, you know, as they were trying to clear out everybody. He's trying to yell at him, come on, you got to get out of here because, you know, we're set up for dark. Mm-hmm. So he, you know, gives him a Death Rider, which, again, once again, just makes the Stone Cold Steve Austin comparisons very apropos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, so we had that, and really quick, your dark matches, I'm not going to spoil any of them. But I'm not going to spoil the results. Your dark matches for the show, which all happened post-show. Brandon Cutler against Jimmy Havoc. Sean Spears against Sonny Kiss. And then Proud and Powerful Santana and Ortiz against Jurassic Express, Jungle Boy, and Marco Stunt. I will spoil one thing. That last match was the best match of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Of the entire night.
I'm really excited to see it. I am, even though Luchasaurus might still be, you know, taking it easy since the hamstring thing, I do like the combination of Jungle Boy and Marco Stunt. I think Marco is better than a lot of people give him credit for, given what he does his particular style.
Yeah,
so,
everybody just focuses on Marco Stunt's size. You know, and how he looks like a 12-year-old. Okay, well,
guess what? Like, that doesn't change the fact that he actually can go inside of the ring, and I think it complements Jungle Boy well in the fact that he can do a lot of stuff similar to Marco, but also sneaky power guy at times too.
Yeah.
So
look forward to that. So that was AEW Dynamite live from the Sears Center in Hoffman Estates, Illinois. Chris, your pros and cons.
Pros and cons. Pros, John Moxley being John Moxley at any point in time, it's going to be an eternal pro for me. Chris Statlander showing up, big pro all around. I did like the women's tag match a good amount as well. Portions of the opening segment were great up until the Ted Irvine to Justin Roberts reveal portion, where I thought it dragged a little too long. So I guess we can take that bottom half of the opening segment and put it into the cons section for me. Orange Cassidy going gobble gobble, baby. Again, phenomenal stuff. Orange Cassidy can do no wrong. Alongside that, you know what? Even though it wasn't as good as their all-out match, I'll give Kenny Omega and Pac a nod onto the pro side as well, just because it did at least tell a particular story that will lead into a good, hopefully a good rubber match between them to finish this.
Right. Any cons?
Cons-wise, I am going to say the main event not being as good as most of us, for us two in particular, as much as we hoped or expected it would be. I would say that was a con on that side. I wasn't the biggest fan of Hangman versus MJF, to be honest, match-wise. I think it did okay, but just given it felt almost too predictable at that point, and Hangman Page could really use like less of the sort of like start and stop momentum that he's been having. JR, again, massive con. The Chicago crowd at chanting "Who are you?" at Butcher and the Blade for the most part. I know you're not like part of that, but just the general consensus of it, that's a con. Justin Roberts getting beat up was a con as well too, because I do like him to a certain extent. Trying to think what else I would say on that. Oh yeah, the finish for the opening match between the good old best friends and Lucha Bros. We both agreed probably not the best call. So
yeah, my pros for this, of course, yeah, Moxley can do no wrong ever at this point. I did enjoy the women's match quite a bit. It was good to see, as you say, Chris Statlander on TV. Hikaru Shida was getting over pretty well, so that was good. The segment itself, the opening segment itself, I guess was good. But I think for precedent, it's going to go in the cons column, because I really just don't want them to ever do that again. Because, you know, that, you know, if you want to set up an alternative product to the WWE, don't do the WWE shtick, you know?
So, yeah, I see where you're coming from with that, definitely.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, again, I did like Pac against Kenny Omega, but again, it just, you know, it was good that it was a 20-minute TV match, and yeah, this is just a transition into, you know, a rubber match down the line, as we determined. Cons, yeah, fuck this trying to make the Lucha Bros into heels and jobbing, and you know, constantly jobbing them out since the end of the tag title tourney. That just is not on. The main event I thought was no good. I did not like this. I mean, and it just left me feeling overall until John Moxley appeared. Oh, and of course, a massive pro would be the Join the Dark Order video packages.
Right, yeah, I forgot.
Love those.
I forgot to mention that. Yes, thank you for reminding me. That goes in my pro columns as well.
Right, but I mean, overall, I thought that the quality of the storytelling and the creatively, and really the match quality was way down from last week. In Indianapolis, I mean, ironically, it just seems like Indianapolis got the better show last week.
Gotcha.
And, you know, and I do know that NXT beat them in the ratings for the first time last week, you know, on the backs of, you know, Survivor Series build and, you know, importing, you know, main roster people to show
exactly.
up. I don't, honestly, with this show, it would surprise me if NXT won it again this week just because I think that they were kind of spinning their wheels a little bit creatively this week on AEW.
And I know it's
a holiday week too, so maybe they were just trying to take it easy a little bit.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. To me in particular too with this is just that with the ratings portion of things, I think it will fluctuate a lot more than probably in the old days of the 90s. I don't think you're going to see like an 82 winning streak by any company in any way, shape, or form like it used to be back in those days. And even then, I mean, it's still a situation where if you like pro wrestling and you want to see all of it, you'll find the time to do it, whether it's for your DVRs of the world and things like that. So it's everything in that regard. But
yeah, I mean,
it is interesting to kind of look at it from a head-to-head perspective at times, just to kind of gauge trends, I guess, as to like what's floating up, what's floating down, and, you know, kind of depending on whatever they're doing with the booking as well. So.
Right, but I mean, again, I'm not trying to focus on the ratings because I don't even watch WWE programming, so I can't really compare it to, you know, I can't really do a first-hand comparison, so, and I'm not about to try to. I could tell you what I thought of AEW this week, and I thought that it was kind of a downward slide from previous weeks. So, you know, at least creatively. So that's why I say it wouldn't surprise me if NXT did win this week as well. But mm-hmm. you know, it's not the be all end all indicator because I thought last week's show was fantastic.
Yeah, mm-hmm, for sure. So, with that said, though, that is pretty much AEW Dynamite in a nutshell off of the Sears Center, their first Thanksgiving Eve show, which I believe they did say is going to be a tradition for them going forward.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always on a Wednesday, so you know, they're going to be able to do it so long as they're on TNT. But next week's show, of course, comes from Champaign, Illinois, the campus of University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign at the State Farm Center. I won't be there for that one. So I'm not driving down to Champaign. So.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's where we're at until next week. So thanks for listening to this special Black Friday edition of Boom Goes the Dynamite. Chris, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitterland and on Instagram over at Brazilian Fury. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. Nothing really important or crazy kind of happening, just recording these shows every week and then eventually gearing ourselves up for the eventual big Strong Style Story anniversary show that we're going to be doing sometime next month.
Yeah, that we're still a number of weeks away on that one. But in the meantime, you can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. My personal Twitter is at GD Wessel. And of course, my other podcast is Busting Balls, where we look at the beautiful game. My co-host and I, we dropped a little pod blast last week to talk about the managerial situation at Tottenham Hotspur. So, yeah, give that a listen. It's only, you know, 30 minutes of your time. So, you know, give that a listen. SoundCloud.com/busting-balls. So I do want to give a quick shout-out to Virtual Pros as they hit their 100th episode this week.
Oh, yeah, it is that time of the year. It is that time for them, finally.
Yep.
So good stuff on our mic for that.
Yep. So, yeah. So, hey, shout out to Virtual Pros. I don't know if they listen to this show or the other one, but, you know, it's all good.
Probably not, but, hey, at least that's there out in the open if they ever do.
Yeah. So, anyway, so that's all I got for this week. Chris, any final words?
Boom goes the dynamite.
Okay. We'll see you next week.